This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Philip C, and joining me in the studio today is Wong Shaoning and Shazana Mokhtar. And what a wonderful, beautiful morning as you see the sunrise. It's 7:05 in the morning on Tuesday, the 5th of April.
But let's recap how global markets closed yesterday. So the Dow was up 0.3%, S&P 500 up 0.8%, and the Nasdaq was up a whopping 1.9%, I think helped by Twitter. Right? Meanwhile, in Asia, it was generally quite an okay day. Nikkei was up 0.3%. Hang Seng was up 2.1%. Shanghai was closed yesterday. Singapore Straits Times was down 0.1%. And our very own FBM KLCI was down 0.2%.
You know, a point worth noting is Hang Seng's up 2.1%. That was also after the announcement of Carrie Lam deciding not to continue on as the chief executive officer, isn't it?
Yes, and I wonder whether there was a little bit of last-minute buying, because today Hong Kong is actually closed for Qingming, so there will be no trading.
Well, for analysis on what's moving markets, we speak to Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategy of U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Good morning, Joe. I know you can't comment specifically on stocks, but Elon Musk, 9.2% stake, making him the largest shareholder on the social media platform Twitter. Can we expect more of such deals in the tech space?
Great question. I can't talk to that specifically, but Elon Musk is, look at his track record. He's done a fabulous job in space with cars, drilling companies. So, he's iconic. He's eclectic. So, you can do what you want with that. But there's social media, to me, it continues to grow and grow out. It's morphing into something bigger and better, hopefully. But it's an interesting play, and he cannot be ignored. He's the Warren Buffett of the new age, so to speak.
And Joe, let's talk about the yield curve. A lot of attention has been paid over it in the last few days. And what we have noticed is that the 2-year yield curve is flashing signs of inversion, this time against the 30-year. And this is the first since 2007, joining other parts of the curve. Some say this signals a recession. Do we ignore it, though, at our peril?
You can't ignore anything what the yield curve suggests, but we're looking more like, say, the 10-year versus the 3-month. That's the more telling indicator. And right now, the spread is like 186 basis points. So, yes, I think, recession is coming into the narrative of Wall Street, but more for 23, 24. And we've got a lot, the Fed has a lot of work to do, but I'm not looking for a recession in the next 12 months. Consumer has a lot of spending power. Employment numbers were robust. Inflation, for sure, is a big issue. So the Fed is behind the curve. Everyone knows that. It's priced into the market. How quickly will they move? Will they kill the golden goose? Perhaps. But remember, one thing, recessions aren't terminal, right? They're part of economic life. We had a recession in 2001. It was 9 months. We came in and out of it before people knew even what happened. So I know there's fears of recession, but don't take that as a sign to abandon equities. Do not run from equities because you fear recession.
Okay, we'll come back to that in terms of asset allocation and investment strategy. But I'm more curious about your thoughts on what will be revealed in the Fed minutes.
Great question. I mean, what will be revealed is the Fed is playing catch up. And, I think there'll be a lot of hawkish tones. But, the good news is, and this has happened very quickly, we've not only priced in 50 basis point hike in the next Fed meeting, but the next meeting after that. So the markets are staying up with the Fed as it pivots toward a more hawkish stance. So, that's good. So I think from the minutes, you're going to see a Fed hopefully not panicking, but realizing, wow, we're behind the curve.
What about its balance sheet, though? How are they going to reduce it currently with this bearish bond market?
Yeah, it's going to have to be very slowly, because you don't want to double down on higher rates, reducing the balance sheet. So I'd like to see them, be a little bit more dovish with it. Absolutely going to reduce the balance sheet, but not all at once, not aggressively. And I think that will just kind of calm a little bit here of a lot of these fears about the cost of capital rising. So I think hopefully they can kind of thread that needle, raise rates aggressively, go slowly or incrementally on the balance sheet.
So earlier you said, Joe, don't give up on equities just yet, but we do see inflationary fears and geopolitical uncertainty dousing the flames of any equity market rally that starts up. So what would you suggest is the better strategy in relation to holding stocks at the moment?
I mean, we still like, I mean, I sound like a broken record, I know. But we still like equities. Equities are the inflation hedge. They're a geopolitical hedge beyond the main indices, you know, NASDAQ, Dow, S&P. Beneath the hood, you know, we still like commodities, agricultural complex, aerospace, cybersecurity, materials, certain industrials. So, yes, I mean, there's going to be a lot of choppiness. But as the Fed raises rates, inflation is becoming a bigger issue. In fact, you know, the barn is on fire, so to speak. Equities, income, dividend payers, that's your best hedge. And we're seeing a lot of people, it's interesting, we're seeing a lot of people now go defensive, utilities, staples. That makes sense to me. Might be a little early, but it's you know, it's never, you know, it's okay to be early, but we see the market, you know, kind of late stages, the economic cycle as the Fed raises rates. Makes sense. Staples, utilities, that's some of those stodgier, slower growth value. That's where you want to put money to work.
I do want to keep to the theme of giving up equities because many U.S. investors have given up on China equities, haven't they? But recently we saw Chinese regulators, you know, they've removed some hurdles impeding the audit of public listed companies in China, in the United States. Do you think this is time to change course?
Yeah, we've always been constructive on Chinese equities, even through kind of the dark days, the last couple of months, quarters, delisting, the threats of trade. So you know, I do think, you know, in China, I mean, a lot of the big institutional fund managers are there. I think retail should be there. We know the companies. A lot of them, people have been in and out. So I think it's encouraging that what China is signaling to the United States, kind of aligning, quote unquote, their interests with ours. That's very positive. So these are very good companies, relatively speaking. They can stand on their own. So to me, I like big. I've always said this. Big tech to me is like, you know, big China, big U.S. And they're really kind of the globe's two horses, and we want to own both.
Do you like ASEAN Tech, though, Joe? And this is on the back of GoTo. I'm not sure whether you follow this name. It's an IPO coming out of Indonesia's e-commerce, and recently we had Bukalapa, we also had Grab, but they don't debut well in markets. Do you think that it's just a question of overpricing it, or do you still like the sector?
I mean, the thing is, for any new startup out of, like, say, whether it's Indonesia or India or even Sweden or Finland, the big tech players, U.S. and China, they're big. They're big platform players. They have huge first mover advantage. They're well capitalized. So it's an uphill battle. Doesn't mean they can't succeed. Maybe be bought, merged, or whatever. So you know, be careful there. You know, maybe they're more trades than investments. But you know, it's good that we have these upstarts continuing to come, because that's what keeps the big guys nimble and on their, you know, keeps them aware of what's happening. So, you know, I like to see other parts of the markets bubble up, new apps, new innovation, more ideas, because that's what, you know, makes for more technological innovation.
But macro-wise, do you think ASEAN is poised for a breakout performance, you know, this time with the pandemic, you know, way behind its past now as we enter endemic phase? Do you think overall macro ASEAN is an interesting bet?
It is, you know, pandemic to endemic, and I'm a little discouraged a little bit about what's happening with China, you know, Shenzhen and Shanghai. But nevertheless, when we go from the endemic stage, particularly ASEAN, yes, more travel, more leisure, services, that's going to break out. I would play it that way. You know, more of the travel, the tourism. I think that's a big story for the second half of this year. And I've said this before, but I can't tell you how it feels like the United States, there is no pandemic. No one wears masks. No one cares. No one's checking ID cards. It's fabulous. And that's coming to ASEAN, your neighborhood. And that will help boost growth, earnings, and just confidence in general. It's coming. It's going to happen.
Joe, thank you very much. And we hope we welcome you back in Malaysia. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategy of U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, telling us, don't give up on equities.
Yeah, it's the hedge against inflation. Meanwhile, he thinks the Fed should just raise rates aggressively, but be very slow when it comes to their balance sheet. I think Joe's dog was also participating in the
yes.
conversation. It did sound like somebody was barking in the background, right?
That's right. I think he also, you know, as he's talking about the balance sheet, take a more dovish stand. But talking about social media, I think as well as the first question we were asking Joe, Twitter, right? Because we saw yesterday Elon Musk disclosing he bought a 9.2% stake in Twitter worth close to $3 billion, making him the largest shareholder of company. And what we saw, Twitter shares surged as much as 27%.
That's right. It did seem to take the world by surprise in a way. And Elon Musk isn't a stranger to that. Yeah, I remember last year that came out news that he was selling off his stake in Tesla. So this time around, news is that he's buying shares in Twitter. And it comes 2 weeks after he actually appeared to criticize the social media platform. Mm. He was asking people, oh, do you think Twitter is fair? Does it really subscribe to principles of freedom of expression? But hey, now you know he's infiltrated the company.
Infiltrated. I like that word, Shaz.
He's the biggest shareholder. Vanguard is Twitter's second biggest shareholder with 8.8% stake. What can he do in that space?
He's just made some very clever decisions, right? Okay, let me tell you why. Because he's just become even richer. So he was already number one on the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. But as a result of his 9.2% stake in Twitter, which went up 27%, and Tesla shares also went up 5% yesterday, he's just got even richer. So he got richer by $15.3 billion last night.
I mean, he just bought himself his PR arm, isn't it? He's just literally bought it. And I feel like there's some parallels with like Jeff Bezos buying the Washington Post, but he's basically amped it up and taken it to another level. I think for me, it's very interesting that now he's been able to control his narrative, and that will also help him drive his market capitalization for his other businesses going forward.
Perhaps, but it's curious because Twitter hasn't really, it's caused a lot of controversy for Elon Musk, right? I mean, he tends to use Twitter the way Trump used Twitter.
Yeah.
Sometimes he tweets.
Will they ban him? Can they ban him now?
Well, sometimes he tweet things that, you know, causes his Tesla shares to kind of go haywire. So I don't know. I'm curious to see where this goes.
Well, I think this is a very interesting space. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.